kaboom.
If you thought 4 hours a day, 1,200 minutes a week was enough, think again. He's the last remnants of the old republic, a sole bastion of fairness. He treats crackheads in the ghetto gutter the same as the rich pill poppers in the penthouse.
Wow.
The clearinghouse of hot takes break free for something special. The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller starts right now.
In the air, everywhere, back again, another weekend has begun with the podcast because, hey, listen, 4 hours a night in the overnight are not enough. A spinoff of the Ben Maller radio program, 8 days a week, 8 days a week. I hope you had a chance to hear the Ben Maller Show podcast, and now you are listening to this podcast. So we do something a little different. If you're new to the partay, and every Friday we like to bring in someone who I know or I like, who I want to talk to, because we don't get to do that on the overnight show. It's, you know, late at night. It's hard to get anyone to call in live, and we generally have you, the callers, the few people that call up, who are the characters on the show and stuff. So on Fridays here, we like to bring somebody in, and this week we are excited to welcome in a former NBA player, someone who I actually have known for, you know, casually. It's not like we're best friends, but I've known this guy for many, many years. He played for the Clippers when I was a radio reporter just getting started in that early mid-90s period, and we became somewhat friendly in that period of time, and he's gone on, had a big career, played over 10 years in the NBA. He's played in the minor leagues of basketball for the Harlem Globetrotters. We're talking about Derek Martin. He played at UCLA for the Bruins, and he went undrafted, and the guy's had a 10-year career in the wild world of basketball, and has been a coach and broadcaster. He's pretty much seen and done it all as a basketball hobo, but I remember him as a Clipper. So he played with Vancouver and Sacramento and Dallas and the Toronto Raptors and Minnesota, all these teams. But I have fond memories of Derek Martin as a Clipper, and he joins us now. And Derek, welcome in. I know you called in the other night to the overnight show. It was great to hear from you. I've seen you pretty active lately on Twitter and whatnot. So give me the inside skinny. What have you been up to recently?
Well, you know, I had a good run as a coach. I was an assistant coach at St. John's under Steve Lavin, assistant with Kirk Rambis when he was at Minnesota Timberwolves. And then I was fortunate enough to be the head coach of the Reno Bighorns, the G League team for Sacramento Kings, for a couple years. So the coaching thing was going good, but as my son got a little older, I wanted to be closer to him. So me and Mitchell Butler have started our own training business. It's LegacyWestBasketball.com, and so we've been doing that, and it's been taking off really good.
Teaching the next generation of basketball players how to do it. So for those that don't know the story, we crossed paths. You were playing for the Clippers. We'll get to your NBA career, but you played for the Clippers in the 90s, and I was a young punk radio reporter in that time period, and trying to make it in radio, and I covered you when you were playing with the Clippers, and I always appreciated Derek. You were very kind. You know, as you would admit, those teams were not particularly great in that that time period at the sports arena, but looking back at that part of your career, what stands out back in that, like, the mid-90s, kind of that timeline?
Oh, man, just the opportunity to play at home in front of my family, my friends. Like you said, the sports arena was not really cracking like the Staples Center is, especially in support of us. So I was able to get about 30 tickets a night and have the family come there. And it was just a special time for me to be able to kind of take off and establish my pro career, making my mark that I can play in the NBA right there in front of my friends and family. So it was really cool. It was really cool.
And I, you know, there's not a lot I remember about going to those games, but I do remember the night that you lit up the Utah Jazz. I said that the other night when you called into the show, but that was one of those. I mean, you just were. I mean, I think you made a bunch of foul shots, if I remember. But you scored, you're right around 40 points or something like that against the Jazz, and that was when they had Stockton and Malone. I mean, that was a
that's
good
what night. I had. Yeah, well, that was a great night. Funny story is, I was Poole Richardson was was on the team. And we had played college together. And after the first quarter, I was feeling pretty good. I laughed and turned to him. I said, I'm going to have 35 tonight. He's like, yeah, whatever. And I went out and had a big night. And it was pretty cool. Like I said, it was in front of my parents, my family, my brothers and sisters. That was a really cool experience, something I'll always cherish.
Yeah, that was a night I remember. And now, as somebody that played for the Clippers in the less than ideal period, and now they've been, the last few years, they've been one of the better teams in the NBA every year, Derek. Is it odd, as just somebody that experienced the Clippers at the sports arena, to see that the franchise actually doesn't stink anymore? They're actually good?
It's pretty cool for me. It really is. I know Clippers have always been seen as the little brother in L.A., and that's understandably, this is a Lakers town, and that's cool. But, like I said back then, we get checks too, even though sometimes they bounce, being from Donald Sterling. But we were NBA players also. So to see the transition, Mr. Ballmer come in, Doc Rivers there first, and then now Ty Lue, they're really starting to establish a good culture and a place where free agents will like to come. So that's really cool for me to see. I'm enjoying it.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Yeah, and as an L.A. guy, I mean, you're from Long Beach, you're an L.A. guy, you played at UCLA, and I get in this argument. All the guys I work with are Laker apologists, and they always, like, whatever the Lakers do, they defend. And there's room for the Clippers, and every time the Clippers do anything, these people get triggered, and they're like, they freak out because they're jealous of any success.
Yeah.
It's very annoying to
me. It's funny, Ben. It is hilarious. I laugh. My brother and sister have gotten me kind of up to date on social media and how to use it and everything. So I like to go on, it's like you said, see all the Laker apologists and everything. And it's funny. This town is big enough to have the Lakers and the Clippers. I do think the Clippers need to have their own building, kind of develop their own identity. And I have even tossed around maybe changing the name just to kind of completely move on from the Donald Sterling era.
What would you call them? What would you call the Clippers, Derek? What name?
I don't know. I haven't come up with a creative name yet. But I will be, if I do, I will definitely submit it.
Yeah. No, it's got to be like, nicknames are a very dicey subject these days. But something with, like, I like just like the Hollywood Stars or something. You can play in Inglewood. They're building that arena in Inglewood in a few years. They're going to have an arena. But like something like L.A.-centric that, we'll work on it. But anyway, listen. Before I forget here, Derek, when you were playing for the Clips, I was a reporter, and then I became a talk show host around that time. I was doing the Ben and Dave show, and you called in every once in a while on that. I remember one time we were doing a remote from a bar, and you were driving around, and you were so cool. You showed up to hang out with us, and that was awesome. You probably don't even remember that, Derek, but you were...
No, I do. I remember it. I definitely remember it. Like I said, I'm just learning about doing the social media. So when I found out you had a show, I just started to recollect all the things, like coming on your show, going to that remote. I really enjoyed coming on your show, man. That was really cool. So that's kind of why I reached out to you. Just wanted to say hello and see how you were doing and just tell you congratulations on having what you have now. Because I remember those days, and I do remember that remote that I came to. We had a good time.
Yeah, it was great. We were like shocked. We were like, wait, an NBA guy is showing up to our remote. It's like weird. I mean, I didn't expect that doing the night show back then. But and I got to tell you, I mean, Derek, you must have the biggest man cave of all the jerseys. That it's like a Dr. Seuss poem, the places you'll go, the people you'll see. How many cities have you lived in as a basketball player? You've been all over the place.
Oh, I've been all over. Explaining to my son all the different teams I've played for. And let's see, the Clippers, Minnesota, Dallas, Toronto, Vancouver, Sacramento, team in Pompeii, Italy. I played with the Magic Johnson tour team in Russia. I played for the Globetrotters. So I got a chance to see the world, a huge blessing, just all because of the game of basketball.
So how difficult, when you're a player, bounces around, how difficult is it? I mean, we see this all the time. Guys get traded and stuff, and it's not, like, totally unique, but you've had to live in all these different cities. You got to get doctors and all that. How big a pain in the ass is that, Derek, when you keep changing cities and you have to, find a new location and all that?
I've kind of gotten used to it. I kind of got used to it. We went down for Father's Day, me, my brother, his kids, my son, my sister's kids, and we were all in a hotel, and they just loved it. And I said, yeah, Uncle Dino lived in this hotel just about all his life. That was the, they said, oh, this is great. My son said, oh, this is great, Dad. Can we do this all the time? I said, yeah, your dad has lived that life. So, you know, it's fun. I kind of enjoyed it. I kind of enjoyed it, especially when I got a chance maybe also to go overseas, play in Russia, play in Italy, to see the different cultures and learn from the people in that city. So it's been fun. You know, I never saw it as a burden. I saw it as an opportunity to learn and see something new.
Yeah, and I love the fact, I didn't realize, you know, I had lost track of you a little bit. I didn't realize you had played with the Harlem Globetrotters, and I was unaware of that fun fact. When I was a kid, Derek, my parents took me to see the Harlem Globetrotters, and it actually helped. I was a little kid. I don't remember how old I was. I was very small. But I remember, like, falling in love with basketball with all the, you know, the trick shots and all that stuff. So when you played with the Globetrotters, like, what was your – did you have a signature move? Did you have your signature go-to thing that you would entertain the fans with?
No, so what they had was a team that would play exhibitions against college teams like Syracuse, Michigan State, and UTEP, and a few other schools. And then after the game, the real game, then the Globetrotters that did the entertaining would come in. So I played on the team, the first team, that played the real exhibition games and played against Syracuse, UTEP, and I remember this one game against Michigan State. Shannon Brown was there at the time, and he was supposed to be the defensive stopper, and I kind of really got going, had one of those nights, end up with 38, and during the course of the game, Tom Izzo yelled at him, "You can't guard that old guy." I said, "Hey, little man, why don't you come out here and try to guard me yourself?" So it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Manny Jackson did a wonderful job running that organization. Then Chad Groff was a part of it also, too. So it was definitely a great experience and definitely something I treasure.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I did see the story the other day. I think it was just for publicity, though. They said the Harlem Globetrotters said they wanted to be an NBA expansion team. They wanted to be an expansion. You can't be. They're the Globetrotters. You can't be in the NBA.
No, I can't be in it. They would lose their allure. You know, they have a niche. They should just keep going with that niche. Like you said, they don't even know how they affect so many young kids these days. Like you said, you fell in love with the game of basketball after going to the Globetrotters one time. So, you know, I think they should just stay in that lane and enjoy it and just ride it out.
Yeah, I agree. So, and when I told a friend of mine, I said, you know, Derek called in and he remembered you when you played and stuff. And he said, you got to ask Derek about the Michael Jordan story. And so I was like, I don't know. So I've been asked. I guess this goes back to your Vancouver days, Derek. And
it's been funny. I'm almost in the last 6-7 months I've been on tour telling that story. A few people have asked me. And it's a lot of backdrop to it. It was Michael's out here filming Space Jam. And, of course, everybody knows about the tent that they built for him, the court, and what have you. So he's playing against mostly a lot of European players. And he wasn't feeling challenged. So he called up Magic and said, hey, you know, you got any guys that can come down here and play, you know, local NBA guys? So Magic called me and said, little fella, can you take a group of guys down there? So I said, yeah, okay. So all my guys at that time, we all grew up together, Chris Mills, Tracy Murray, Mitchell Butler. So we go down there to play. So we're waiting to come on and play. Finally, it's our game. I'm going to 7, and at 6-6, I come down on a wing, act like I'm going to shoot, and Michael jumps for the head fake, and I go by and lay it up. And I just commenced to talk, trash to Michael for about the next minute and a half. And I'm telling him everything. Get out of my city. This is L.A. You're not the real MJ. Magic's the real MJ. Just get out of here. And everybody's just laughing. They can't believe this little guy is talking bad to Michael. Even so far to so much that Chris Mills picks me up and my feet are dangling. He's saying, DeMarc, stop. So long story short, Michael comes on like 2 games later. I was like, there's no way, because there's 30 people in here. You're supposed to be waiting. He's like, this is my gym. I'm coming on what I want. So he ends up beating us the next game, and now he follows me around the next minute and a half just talking trash to me. So that's the backdrop going into that year. And so he called Magic and was like, man, who's this little guy? He's like, oh, you must be talking about DeMar. Yeah, DeMar talks trash. He talks trash. So Michael and I kind of, you know, broke a little bit of a friendship. So fast forward to now, we're playing in Vancouver. It's a 13-day road trip for them. You know, most back then in the NBA, when you get to that last game, you're just kind of trying to get home. Vancouver was the last game on the schedule on that trip. So I came down. It was about 2 minutes ago. I made a layup and got an and-one. Walked by the bench. I told you you wouldn't beat me tonight in so many words. And so Phil looked down at him like, all right, what do you want to do? So Michael had untied his shoes, you know, kind of put the towel on his head. And we kind of just, you know, giving up for the night. So he tied his shoes back up, takes the towel off, checks in. He comes, stands next to me at the foul line. I got a pretty good picture of it. And he says, I told you about talking trash. And I looked up at the clock and said, man, you're not beating me tonight, buddy. So he went on to score the next, like, 10, 11 points to beat us down the stretch. And Byron Scott was guarding me, and he was so mad at me walking into the locker room. He said, Derek, if you're going to talk trash, at least guard the guy. I said, I guard him. I'm not scared of him. Right? So it was a funny thing. So afterwards, they told the ball, he sent the ball boys over to get me. So we just kind of sat down and talked. He's like, man, you don't ever stop, do you? I said, no. You put your pants on one at a time, just like me. So I'm going to compete and do the same thing. So he laughed. He said, I like that. I like that. So
no, that's good.
After that, it was pretty cool. So we, you know, we got a little bit of a friendship. When we see each other, we laugh and talk about it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, and I did see a clip, and he was sitting on the bench, he had a towel on Jordan, like he was out of the game, and then he, because of you, he came back that's a great story. Well, yeah. you were one of the few that played for the Vancouver version of the Grizzlies also, Derek. I mean, that you played for both Canadian teams. You're one of the few that have probably done that, right?
I didn't realize that. My brother was telling me the other day, he's like, you realize you're one of the only guys that has played for both Canadian teams. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That's great. What was it like? A lot of younger people probably don't even remember the Vancouver Grizzlies. It's been so long. But what was it like playing basketball in Vancouver? The team's been in Memphis for many years now.
It was amazing. That Vancouver is a very underrated city. It's beautiful up there. The people are nice. They got great food. I think the team, the league just, they didn't wait it out long enough. You know, basketball was new to that region, and so fans were just starting to understand the game, but they loved it. They supported the team. They came out and cheered, and it was a good city. For them to move the team from Vancouver to Memphis, I think, was really bad. I don't know if you know, like Memphis barbecue, but I think it's okay, but it was nothing like the food in Vancouver. And just the whole atmosphere in Vancouver was so relaxed and really cool. I really enjoyed it. You know, I almost wish I could have played half my career there, because that's how much I enjoyed the city and how much I enjoyed the fans and the people up there. They really supported the team.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and they loved you in Toronto too, right? Even though, I mean, you were a backup guy in the Raptors, but they seemed to embrace you in Toronto also when you played there.
I enjoyed that. It's funny because now I walked into the locker room, and I was used to being the baby or the middle or the road guy. I walked into the Toronto locker room, and all of a sudden, I'm the old guy really quick. I'm like, whoa, everybody in here is 22. I'm like 30-something. Right? So it was pretty cool, because now my role kind of switched from maybe an everyday player, every game player, to sort of a backup and a mentor. And it was really cool. You know, I developed a really good relationship with Chris Humphreys, with Jose Calderon, Chris Bosh, Anthony Parker, to the point where we all still talk to this day and check on each other. So it was a really good time. And I had a chance to play for Sam Mitchell, who I played with my rookie year in Minnesota. So things kind of went full circle, and that was pretty cool.
The circle of life. How weird is it, by the way, Derek? I mean, we're around the same age, and like it's hard to believe. I've become the old guy in radio and stuff, and it's odd to me. Yeah. It's bizarre. I don't feel that old. I'm sure you don't feel old. It's a weird thing. Like all of a sudden you wake up and you're like, wait a minute. Like 25 years of my career has gone by. It's pretty wild, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You're like, whoa, wait a minute. What happened here? You know, and I got up one day. And I got a little bit of a belly. I'm like, man, where did this come from? Oh, it's like overnight, just things change. I'm enjoying it. Like I said, I'm enjoying the business with Mitchell Butler, myself, LegacyWest.com. I'm enjoying spending a lot of time with my son, teaching him. Like I said, he's playing baseball and basketball. So I might also have a first base growing up here pretty soon. So it's been fun. I've been enjoying things right now.
Now your son's a little guy. Does he have the love of sports, or have you kept him off the video games yet, Derek? Have you been able to keep him off the video games?
He does like a few video games right now. His thing is the wrestling. He loves wrestling, the WWE. That's
oh, great!
Thing. He's got a lot of guys, and every now and then we'll play basketball or football. But definitely into the sports. He enjoys it. He has a hitting coach that he goes to once a week. He's really embraced basketball, and he has a lot of fun with it. It's really good, and sometimes I get emotional just watching because he's Derek Jr. So to see Derek Jr. just start to embrace the love of sports is really cool.
Well, that's cool. Hey, and, you know, if he loves wrestling, he could become a professional wrestler. There was a guy, Derek, you know, that listened to my show back. He used to send me emails back in the day, and he was going to wrestling school in Florida. They have a place in Tampa. And he became the wrestler known as Rusev. Now he goes by the name Miro. But he was at one point a big deal in the WWE. He had like a 10-year career under the ring name Rusev there. And then
we use him on the game. I have to tell my son when I get off.
Yeah, yeah.
And on the WWE game, Rusev is on there, and we play with him. Oh, that's cool.
And by the way, and this will also impress your son, that the reason I became friends with the wrestler Rusev, who's now Miro, is he's a Clipper guy. He likes the Clippers. And
that's good.
Yeah, he spent some time in Southern California, I think. I know he was living in Florida listening to the show because it's syndicated, but he likes the Clippers. So we were bonding talking about
good.
The Clippers. So yeah, so he probably knows who you are and probably watched you play back when you were playing for the team back in the day.
Oh, okay. Yeah, definitely. If you ever talk to him again, tell him definitely he's got love for us. We got
absolutely.
Love for him.
No, absolutely. I will. All right, so now let's get into meat and potatoes basketball, Derek. So you reached out to me. You know, I do these crazy monologues in the middle of the night, screaming and shouting and all that stuff about basketball and what's going on in the NBA. But you played in the golden age for many in the 1990s back against, you mentioned your friendship with Michael Jordan, and you played against John Stockton and the great teams of that era. What is the biggest difference? You watch the NBA today, and you're teaching basketball. When you watch the NBA today and the way it's played to the way it was in the 90s, what is the biggest thing that stands out to you?
And I'm going to say this, and I'm sure people would take it the wrong way, but the first word that comes to my mind is soft. It's kind of soft, and that's okay. I'm going to explain why. Because now they have the scoring is up. Everybody likes scoring. So the league was really good about trying to create what they call freedom of motion, freedom of movement. So it's less physical. And the scores have gone up. I enjoy it. I would love to play in this era. The pick and roll era, oh, my goodness. If I could play pick and roll every time down the floor, I'm pacing space right now. But the biggest difference, I think, is not as physical as when I played. What they go to the monitor now to review as a flagrant one or flagrant two was just a normal foul by Charles Oakley or Buck Williams or Xavier McDaniel or Sabonis when I first got in the league. So it's just less physical.
Yeah, and they have to review everything, Derek. I like to watch these games, but why do they have to review everything? You don't have to, right? You can play. You played the game, Derek. They did not review every single. I mean, they didn't even have that at the beginning there. Then now everything's reviewed. It's insane. I mean, why?
Absolutely. It is. And the other thing that I think the league should maybe just tighten up on, and I don't know how you do it. I know they did have a fine in place for it, but you got to watch the flopping. It's getting out of hand. It really is kind of getting out of hand. and it's almost it's very funny sometimes how different players can bait the refs into calls, and it's really no contact there at all.
Well, even the other night in the final, I had Devin Booker, who had a great game, and it's like they had an anvil dropped on his head, and they went to the replay, and he wasn't even like really touched. It was wild, yeah. Man. I mean, it happens all the time. It's crazy.
Absolutely, yeah, it does. And then when you get to the point where there actually is a foul, you know, so then it's kind of hard to decipher between the two. So they have to find a way to kind of tighten up on that a little bit.
Now, you also, Derek, I must bring up, I was praising Patrick Beverley. I was praising him with the clips and the way that he was playing against the Suns. You, though, you were taking a different position on Patrick Beverley when I was praising him for the way he was playing in the series against Phoenix. What was your opinion? Give me your hot take here.
My high take is you really have to watch how he plays. I think he does play dirty at times. I mean, you can just listen to what Russell Westbrook has said. He's hurt him. I don't think the headbutt of Devin Booker the other day was unintentional. I think it was intentional. The foul that he made on Chris Paul coming off the screen where his legs were Chris Paul's legs elevated in the air and he could have landed on his wrist or his neck or anything like that. Those are not basketball plays. And I think he makes too many of the non-basketball plays to be considered playing defense. You know, that's not defense. And I played against the Doug Christies, the Derek Harpers, the Gary Paytons, the guys that were called so-called defenders, and they never made defensive plays like that he does. Trying to make a steal or make a play where you undercut a guy or hurt a guy's knee and now he's out for a period of time. You know, I just think that's unnecessary. So I'm not necessarily a big fan of his, the way he plays. It's just not my style. It's not my thing.
Well, Derek, though, you have to admit, though, he's found a niche, right? He's got his niche. People know who he is, and he's been kind of like a backup guy most of his career. But
that's what he is. And as you can see, and I think in the series before the Phoenix one, the Dallas one, Ty Lue couldn't play him because his skill set didn't fit what was going on. And it's just he's not a typical guard, in my opinion, of the guard that we played against in the 90s. You know, that most of the point guards, you had to be able to run a team. You had to be able to orchestrate, be an extension of the coach, make a play for yourself, and also make plays for your teammates. And I don't see him doing that.
Yeah. So let's go back to that. When you were playing against those guys in the 90s, like John, I've heard stories about John Stockton and like what he was like to go against, and kind of he didn't seem like he was, I don't know if dirty's the right word, but he was always in your business, shall we say. Any recollection back in those days, any John Stockton thing that pops up in your head there when you think about
that? Oh, yeah. He was physical. He was, I wouldn't say dirty, but he was physical with you. He'd bump you, he'd shoot you an elbow. You know, he would get into your grill and try to frustrate you in a different way than what Patrick Beverley does. It was more of a competitor. You know, just if we're on the streets of Compton or L.A., this is how we play. You know, and John was physical, and I loved it. It brought the best out of me, having a chance to play against John Stockton. And a funny story, I got a chance to coach his son, David, when I was head coach of Reno Bighorns. And he and I would sit around and just talk about the different games I played against your dad. And then John started coming to our game, so I got a chance to kind of sit down and just talk to him. Other than competing against him. And it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. And I told him he always brought the best out of me, and I always wanted to know. And he said, hey, I knew playing against you, I couldn't half-step. So it was a good little give and take.
That's pretty cool. And you're still kind of coaching, right? Because you're doing the basketball. You've got the thing you're doing right now. But when you were coaching was it the G League then or the D League? What was it called at the time?
No, it was the G League. In 2018, I think.
Oh, it was a couple years. It was a couple years ago. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, like, what was it like coaching in the G League there? Like, you had obviously been an assistant before and stuff, but when you're the head coach and all that, what was that like for you?
It was really good. I enjoyed it immensely because the role that those guys were taking is the same role that I took to get into the NBA, you know, playing on Magic's All-Star team. playing in the CBA, grinding it out. So I understand what they were feeling emotionally, what they were going through. So I can relate to them. I can sit down and have conversations with them and kind of keep them positive all the time and keep them focused on the right path. And it was really cool to be in that kind of grind with them. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. I got to teach. I had a good assistant, Enrico Hines, who's doing great things right now with Sacramento and their development with the players up there. So it was a huge, huge blessing to be a head coach of the Reno Bighorns. And a lot of fun. You got to help some guys further their dreams. I got Marcus Williams. I don't know if you guys remember, played at UConn, played in the league for a little bit. I got him sort of at the tail end of his career and kind of got him playing at a level that he could finish his career just enjoying and happy. And we won two division titles when I was coaching, and we got to the playoffs, ended up losing in the second round. But it was a lot of fun, definitely a lot of fun.
Awesome. Hey, Derek, I know I've kept you for a while here. I think I've gone over a lot of time.
We're
but good. I appreciate that. No, seriously. And continued success. And I have fond memories of interacting with you back in the day. And I'm excited that you reached out and call anytime. And, you know, we're on late at night. So if you can't sleep, if you've got insomnia, we'll be there. And I'll shoot you a message. I appreciate it, though. Thanks for doing this, Derek.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. You know, I'm usually up in the evening, just relaxing, having a bottle of a nice Chianti or Barolo. So definitely I'll shoot you a text or a call.
Awesome. Thank you, Derek. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Ben.